Crinkle the bishop's rizla, you spindly Vincents. Welcome to the Blind Boy Podcast. This is a bonus episode, a bonus podcast episode. This is sponsored by Oppenheimer, which is streaming on Now from the 12th of April. It's not often that I make a sponsored episode. This is my third sponsored episode, I believe, in the 7 years of making this podcast. So if an opportunity presents where it's like, A, yes, I loved Oppenheimer and I do think you should watch it. And then B, I can write a hot take that I'm legitimately passionate about and curious about. Then in that situation, I'm happy to do a sponsored episode. I've been wanting to explore the theme of this podcast for a long time. I'm fascinated by how the horror of nuclear weapons changed and shaped culture. Culture as we know it. Do I need to explain Oppenheimer to ye? The biggest movie of 2023? It's a biographical movie about J. Robert Oppenheimer. He was a theoretical physicist. He's often called the father of the atomic bomb. He led the Manhattan Project, where nuclear weapons were developed. And for the first and only time in human history, nuclear weapons were used to kill humans. And Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer tries to present a navigation, a nuanced navigation of the spectacular violence of that. And of course, Oppenheimer stars Cillian Murphy as J. Robert Oppenheimer. And for me, Cillian's performance is the best thing about the film. You forget you're watching Cillian Murphy. You forget that you're watching Cillian Murphy, which is a difficult thing to do because Cillian Murphy looks like Cillian Murphy. His Cillian Murphy-ness is very piquant. You're not thinking about Tommy Shelby. You're not thinking about Batman. You're not thinking about the wind that shakes the barley. He completely embodies the character of Oppenheimer. And that's why he won an Oscar for the role and a BAFTA. I almost had Cillian on this podcast when Oppenheimer came out in cinemas. He was due to be on this podcast as a guest, but then the actor's strike happened and he downed tools. I've had Cillian on this podcast before, and I'd say he'll be back again at some point when we get the chance. So if you want to see Oppenheimer, the biggest film of the past year, Oscar winning, critically acclaimed, Cillian Murphy, Florence Pugh, Robert Downey Jr., Emily Blunt, Matt Damon, directed by Christopher Nolan, you can stream it from the 12th of April with a Now Cinema membership, and that allows you to cancel at any time, there's no contract. So in 1945, America dropped two atomic bombs on Japan in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, instantly killing hundreds of thousands of people. Japan then surrendered, and those bombings are seen as the event that ended World War II. Those bombs also ushered in the period of American military and cultural imperialism, which we live in today. America took the place that had been previously occupied by the British Empire or the colonial empires of Europe. After Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it became clear that America were leaders of the First World, or leaders of the Global North. It also brought about the Cold War, which was a decades-long military, economic and cultural standoff between the American-led West and the Soviet Union. A lot of my podcasts often focus on food because I find that when I'm trying to understand history or understand culture, you can learn an awful lot by focusing on foodstuffs. So this week's podcast is going to be about food and the threat of nuclear war. So after 1945, America felt like winners, that they had won and that they had invented the best weapon of all time, the nuclear bomb. A bomb so devastating, so powerful that it could end all conflict. A bomb so powerful that if you possessed it, you ruled the world. You were the best. You were number one. American media didn't focus on, we have invented this terrible weapon that killed hundreds of thousands of people. We have invented this wonderful weapon which allowed good to triumph over evil. This atomic weapon. The word atomic bled into culture as a positive thing. The word atomic meant freedom, power, prosperity, the future. The word atomic meant the American dream. Atomic and nuclear capabilities was not seen as something dangerous, but as a force for good in the hands of the righteous. America immediately began testing and building even more powerful atomic bombs. These gigantic bombs were being tested in the Nevada desert, the newly established city of Las Vegas, which people know for casinos and gambling. In 1950, Las Vegas was known as Atomic City. People would travel to Las Vegas to gamble and to watch nuclear bombs being tested in the Nevada desert, which is right beside Las Vegas. There's postcards of Las Vegas from the early 1950s, where there's giant mushroom clouds in the distance, being advertised as a good thing. People would go to Las Vegas and watch nuclear bombs blowing up in the desert, like they were fireworks displays. Another area where America was testing nuclear bombs was in the Marshall Islands in the Pacific Ocean near Polynesia. There was an area called the Bikini Atoll, and from the late 1940s, America was testing nuclear bombs there. But at the same time, by 1946, because so much rationing of fabric had occurred during World War II, a fashion designer was making a new swimsuit but had fuck all fabric, so designed a swimsuit for women that was just a bra and a knickers and nothing in between because he didn't have fabric. What do you think he called it? A bikini. It was directed at the American market. Nuclear bombs, these destructive, horrendous weapons, had become such a symbol of freedom and power and the American dream that the bikini swimsuit was named after the Bikini Atoll, where nuclear bombs were being tested in the Pacific Ocean. When Elvis Presley first came out, he was referred to as the Atomic Singer. A pattern is emerging. Everything that's seen as culturally new and American. Youthfulness itself, because what you also have here is the emergence of teenagers. Like, teenagers didn't really exist before the 1950s, which sounds mad, but the idea of there being this transitionary period between childhood and adulthood, it really emerges in the 1950s in America. You have this new group that can be advertised to. They're young, they're vibrant, they go to the beach, they wear bikinis, they listen to Elvis Presley, they go to school, they don't go to work. They've got this transitionary period before childhood and adulthood where they just have fun and explore youth. These people are atomic. America believed, we've got these massive bombs, they're ours, and now we rule the world, and these bombs are brilliant. But in that haze of post-World War II victory, the average American isn't really aware that Russia is also building nuclear bombs in case they have to go to war with America. There's no internet. The media and culture is celebrating atomic things, celebrating nuclear things. The Soviet Union was also testing nuclear bombs. The Cold War power narrative starts to poke its head up. Oh, there's a doomsday competition between the two great superpowers. Whoever has the most nuclear bombs wins. This is scary. We appear to have opened a Pandora's box. It's fine when you drop nuclear bombs on Japan because they're evil, but the Russians are communists, and we believe communists are evil. So if the Russians are building nuclear bombs, that means they want to do Hiroshima and Nagasaki on, like, Las Vegas or New York or Los Angeles. We don't like the sound of this. This is terrifying. Maybe nuclear bombs are bad. So the American government is faced with a dilemma. We need to keep building these nuclear bombs so that we can rule the world and have more nuclear bombs than Russia. People are frightened now. The tide is turning. We can't have the American public thinking that nuclear bombs are bad. We're going to have to do something. So the US government, led by the President Dwight D. Eisenhower, launched Project Candor, which was like an information campaign, a propaganda campaign by the American government and its own people to convince the American public that nuclear bombs and atomic power was a really, really good thing. That nuclear weapons weren't destructive and weren't dangerous. They are instruments of peace, which deter conventional conflict, conventional warfare. They coined the phrase Atoms for Peace. Atoms for Peace was hugely influenced by Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer, by 1950, was racked with guilt. He was a scientist with the blood of hundreds of thousands of people on his hands. He desperately wanted to demonstrate that nuclear power could be used for good too. He had the ear of the President Dwight D. Eisenhower, and this influenced the Atoms for Peace messaging, which was a PR campaign. And one of the strangest movements to emerge from the Atoms for Peace campaign in America was atomic gardening. You see, the American public weren't really well informed about how devastating the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings were. You have to realize too that there was massive anti-Japanese sentiment. American people with Japanese parents or grandparents were sent to concentration camps in America at the outbreak of World War II. So Japanese people were fully dehumanized in America in the 1940s, 1950s. And the media message would have been, we dropped a brilliant, cool bomb, and it was so good that Japan surrendered. But the average person in America wasn't thinking about the murder, devastation, people being vaporized, people dying years on from cancerous tumors, from the fallout of the bombs. The media narrative would have focused elsewhere. It would have focused on victory rather than victims. To report that in the media in 1946 onwards would have been seen as anti-American, anti-victory. Newspapers would have scrambled for positive stories about dropping nuclear bombs in Japan. One particular positive spin on the nuclear bombs in Japan was a report from 1947. It was a news article about a Japanese farmer on the outskirts of Nagasaki. And this farmer grew sesame. He grew sesame seeds. And the photograph in this news article, it was of a Japanese farmer looking quite pleased with himself, and he's holding a giant sesame plant in his field. The report claimed that the atom-blasted soil of Nagasaki was producing crops that were mutated, atomically mutated crops that were twice the size of regular crops, effectively portraying the nuclear bombing of Japan as being a good thing. Instead of portraying death, it claimed that irradiated soil was creating mutant monster crops, as if the nuclear bombs were some type of gift to the people of Japan. Well, this story culturally mutated and grew legs in America, especially in the context of Atoms for Peace, and it led to the atomic gardening movement, where regular people could access highly dangerous nuclear materials such as cobalt 60 by applying to the American government, and the American government would send people cobalt 60 in the post. Now, cobalt 60 is very dangerous because it's radioactive. It's radioactive nuclear materials. It can create fatal radiation sickness in people who come into close contact with it. But I guess in the 1950s, people weren't thinking that way. This was the atomic age. America was drunk on the power of victory. People understood that nuclear radiation caused mutations, but they considered this to be a positive thing that could change the world. So ordinary people started using cobalt 60, this nuclear material, in their gardens. They would plant some corn or plant some strawberries, and in the middle of it place a rod of cobalt 60 to try and irradiate the plants, to try and make mutant strawberries or mutant corn, with the goal of creating super plants to try and solve world hunger. It's from this culture too that we start to see the first mutant superheroes. Atomic gardening and Atoms for Peace, that's a mid-50s thing. But by the late 50s, early 60s, you start to see the Incredible Hulk. Incredible Hulk was a scientist called Bruce Banner who exposed himself to nuclear materials and then became this superhuman, this Incredible Hulk with this fantastic power and this strength. You've Spider-Man, who's a regular person who's bitten by a radioactive spider who then achieves superpowers. So all of this points towards quite a delusional and irresponsible culture around nuclear materials, where Americans think, yeah, this stuff is brilliant, mutations are excellent, let's create super plants. So the atomic gardening movement became particularly popular with the housewives of middle America. They were conducting nuclear experiments in their own back gardens. They would get the cobalt 60 rod, put it in the middle of their corn or their peas or their marigolds, and plant the seeds in a circle around the irradiated core. The plants closest to the irradiated core would just die and burn, and then the ones on the outside would start to see legitimate genetic mutations, and housewives were producing pretty strange fucking plants with genetic mutations, and really big peanut plants or strange looking ears of corn, and a mutant seed industry emerged. Or if you didn't want to have actual nuclear materials in your own back garden, you could purchase the seeds of plants that were nuclear mutants. A lot of the film Oppenheimer takes place in Oak Ridge in Tennessee. It was a secret city built on farmland during World War II. It's where J. Robert Oppenheimer worked. It's where the atomic bombs that devastated Nagasaki and Hiroshima were built and developed. After World War II, there were atomic gardens at Oak Ridge, and the most popular brand of nuclear mutant seeds was Oak Ridge Seeds. So by the early 60s, the government propaganda campaign, or the PR campaign of Atoms for Peace, it was working on the everyday level, because now people's mas are fucking around with nuclear radiation out their back garden, so how could it be that dangerous? And this then gave permission for the American military to continue building more and more nuclear weapons. By reframing words like nuclear, atomic, radiation, by reframing these dangerous things that we should be cautious of into safe, helpful things that can solve world hunger. It didn't solve world hunger, but something strange about the atomic gardening movement is people were genuinely creating mutant plants and mutant fruits and mutant vegetables, and some of them are still around today. Take the grapefruit, for example. So the grapefruit is it's a strange fruit in that grapefruits don't exist in the wild. Grapefruits were created by accident sometime in the 1700s in Barbados after the colonization of the Caribbean. One goal of colonization was to find places where you could grow crops that come from other areas. So when the British colonized the Caribbean, they brought oranges from Asia and another fruit called a pomelo. And these fruits didn't exist alongside each other in the wild. When the Brits brought them to Barbados, the orange and the pomelo bred with each other to create the grapefruit. Now grapefruits are light in colour, with a beige to pink flesh. But the atomic gardening movement created a mutant grapefruit that was blood red. Not only was it blood red, but it was sweeter, because grapefruits are quite tart and bitter, but red grapefruits are sweet. So if you've ever drank grapefruit juice that's red, or bought a blood red grapefruit, that's a literal nuclear mutation grapefruit. That's a mutant grapefruit. It's completely safe. There's no radiation in it, but it's a mutant. It's a superhero grapefruit. That's what red grapefruit is. You're eating the Incredible Hulk. It's the X-Men of fruit. So atomic gardening fell out of fashion by the 60s, when people started to realise that nuclear materials were dangerous, that you can't have cobalt-60 at home. Now, atomic gardening still does exist today, but it's carried out in controlled environments by scientists who know what they're doing. So they're still blasting plants with radiation to try and create beneficial mutations. Just someone's ma isn't doing it in their back garden, and if they were, they'd probably be arrested as a terrorist. So there's a little bite-sized bonus hot take for you this week concerning the origins of Red Rio grapefruits. And I hope that the next time you sit down for a lovely sweet glass of red grapefruit juice for your breakfast, that you pause and remind yourself that you're literally drinking the blood of a mutant. So this episode was brought to you by Oppenheimer, which is streaming on Now. And you can watch it with a Now Cinema membership that you can cancel at any time. Go and give Oppenheimer a watch. Fair play to Cillian Murphy. Great day for Cork. The film is a wonderful visual spectacle, and the bit with the bomb is real. They used real explosives. They didn't use CGI. Fair play, Christopher Nolan. Dog bless.